Today's daf is Nun Hey. We're just going to review a drop of yesterday. Let's say where we started from. We brought this brayta, Tormim Te'enim Ala Gorgorot B'Minyan. In order, we were in this debate, do we go by the present or do we go by the past? Right? Do we go by what the item is right now, by the shiur of what it is now, or do we go by what it was? So we had cases where we brought up figs, dried figs and fresh figs. So in the context of that, we had an issue because based on, if we go by, and that's, we had a few questions, but the main issue was that Masrot, if you give too much, then it's dafka a problem, because then we said Masrot have to be exact, and therefore if you give double the amount or more than the amount, then the rest of what you give is ends up being tevel, and then you never end up taking Truman and Masrot from them, and that's problematic. So in order to resolve that issue, we ended with, at the end of Nun Dalet Amud Bet, with saying that actually what we're talking about was Truma Maaser, and then we quoted this braita from Abba Elazar ben Gomel, who says, "V'nachshav lachem trumatchem b'shtei trumot hakatuv medaber," right, that there's Truma Gdola and there's Truma Maaser, and that what we were talking about in that braita wasn't regular Maaser, it was Truma Maaser, and what he learns from this braita is that from the words "V'nachshav lachem trumatchem" in the pasuk, that Truma Gedola and Truma Maaser, there's two Trumots, and Truma Chem is plural, the same rules apply to both, which would then show that even though Maaser has to be precise, Truma Maaser, which again is the Maaser that the Levi has to give to the Kohen, which is 1/10, it's a Maaser Mina Maaser, but it's called Truma because it goes to the Kohen, that's more on the level of Truma Gedola, which is done be'omed, by estimation, and b'machshava, meaning you could do it with your thoughts alone, you could designate those fruits as Truma. And therefore, it doesn't need to be precise. Well, the machshava doesn't really mean without measuring, but the omed is without measuring. And therefore, we can say that that's what that source was talking about, where it doesn't need to be precise. Okay, so now, and this all started with, we said in the end of that braita, or it didn't all start there, but this is the line we're going to go back to. At the end of that braita, the second part, okay, there was grogrot, there was a teinim al grogrot, and then Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says, Abba hayano tel eser grogrot shebimiktsoa. He would take 10 of the dry, remember the miktsoa is that mat where they would dry out the figs, on 90 that were in the basket. Okay, and we said right now that's talking about Truma Maaser. So according to this, if you're a Levi, and as the case he was giving was his father had 100 figs, 10 of them were dried, 90 of them were not dried, and he took the 10 dried ones and gave it to the Kohen. So now we're going to deal with that. Umina Amar Rabbi Elazar Bar Rabbi Yossi. Abba hayano tel eser grogrot shebimiktsoa al tishim shebekalkala. Okay, from this we're going to have a question, because iamar bishlama lekimot shehen. Again, we're going to go back and say, who does this go according to? If you're going to say it was lekimot shehen, or we generally try to read it as lekimot shehayu, the way they were originally, amrinan shapir. Then it makes sense, because why? He took b'minyan, he took 10 out of 100, which is a perfect 1/10, but it's a perfect 1/10 only if you're going by the way they were originally, because then everything was the same size. But iamart kimot shehen, if we take these dried figs based on what they are now, what's the problem? You're going to have, before we had the issue that you have too many, and then we said it was a problem for Maaser. But here, this can be a problem even if it's true about Maaser, because you have too few. If you take 10 little dried figs and you take them on 90 fresh ones, your 10 little dried figs are much smaller, and you end up with less of the right amount that you need. So therefore, yamar kimot shehen, if we go by the way they are presently, bitzir lehu, they're not enough. Okay, so how can you possibly say this based on what we, you know, the opinion that said before that that it goes based on the present? Amar, and here's an interesting answer. Ki ata Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Israel, Amar Rabbi Elazar, he brought in the name of Rabbi Elazar, the Amora, Shani Grogrot, Grogrot are different. These are different than anything else. In all the other cases, we can say it depends on the Shi'ur. Right, on what it was originally. But Why are they different? Ho'il v'yachol l'shoklan u'lahachziran l'kemot shehen. What does that mean? You can take them, cook them up, and what will happen? Right, you can rehydrate them. And they'll be exactly the same size as they were originally. So therefore, since you can do that, we're going to judge them based on what they are now. Based on what they were originally. In other words, since they can potentially presently go back to their original state. Whereas in cases where it can't, then we're going to go by the original. One interesting halachic nafkamina would be if you have cookies that have flour in it, okay, what happens? You put baking powder and other things and they get bigger, right? So how do you determine the shi'ur for a bracha achrona, right? Bracha rishona you always need to make on any amount. But bracha achrona you need to have eaten a kezayit. So do we go by the kezayit of flour that was in it originally, or do we go by the size of what it is now, that now that it kind of expanded, okay? So there's a bit of a, I think the Mishnah Berurah paskins that you actually go by the amount of flour that was there originally.
It's not very practical unless you knew what the whole batch was.
Right, so it becomes very difficult. In general, it's always very difficult to determine exactly what's a kezayit. When you're eating, you don't exactly know how many grams are in each one, and you know it's generally 27 grams, but how do you know exactly? It's quite complicated, so all the more so if you're going to start going based on how much flour there was originally, you know, it's going to be complicated. You eat enough cookies, right? That's one resolution. You just eat a ton of cookies, and then you don't have to worry about it. You might have to worry about other things, but not that. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, tormim te'inim al hagrogrot b'makom shirigilin la'aso te'inim. It's very interesting. There's a bunch of issues here. I'll kind of raise them from the beginning. Te'inim, fresh figs, are generally nicer than dried figs. However, the problem with fresh figs is that they rot very quickly. Okay, I just bought some yesterday, right? You have to be very careful because they turn in a second and then they're finished. But they are a lot tastier than the dried ones. So, or depending on your preference. But if you're going to give this to the Kohen, the question is, if you give him the fresh figs, it's nicer. So it's nice to give the Kohen the nicer item. On the other hand, if you give him fresh figs,
they rot.
And they're going to rot very quickly, it's not very useful to him. So according to this braita, you can give him fresh figs on dried figs, meaning if you have 90 dried figs and you take 10, or I guess we could talk about truma, whether this is truma maser or truma, there's a debate, but let's just take truma maser like we were talking about. So if you take 1/10 and you take out and dafka give the kohen the fresh ones and leave yourself the dried ones, b'makom shirigilin la'aso te'inim grogrot. Okay, you can do that only if it's a place where there's people to be found who can dry out. Okay, apparently there was a bit of a skill involved in drying out the figs. I mean, I never tried it myself, but there was a bit of a skill involved. So if it's a place where people generally dry them out, then you can give the kohen the fresh ones because he can easily find someone who can dry them out for him. Okay, or maybe he can do it himself. But lo grogrot al te'inim. But you can't give him the dried ones. I'm sorry, did I say it wrong before? Right, you give him the fresh ones, but you can't give him the dry ones. If you have 10 dry ones on 90 fresh ones, you can't give him dry ones for fresh ones. V'afilu b'makom shirigilim la'aso te'inim grogrot. Even if it's a place where generally they turn te'inim into grogrot. So now, we're going to explain this a little better. Amar mar. Amar mar always means we're going back to something we said before. Tormim te'inim ala grogrot, b'makom shirigilin la'aso te'inim grogrot. So what does that seem to imply? It seems to imply, you can, again, let's just repeat it. You can take figs, fresh figs, on the dried figs, give them to the Kohen, as long as it's a place that regilin la'aso te'inim grogrot. But b'makom shirigilin in, that means only in a place where they generally do this. But makom she'en regilim lo. But not in a place where they don't generally do. Hechidami, what would be the case here? Idi'ika kohen, if there's a kohen. Now, here's the issue. There could be a place where there's a lot of kohenim. There could be a place where there really aren't kohenim. Now, if there aren't kohenim, then what's going to happen? You're going to have to leave it for the long term until you find the kohen. So, idi'ika kohen, makom she'eno ragil amaylo. If there is a kohen around, so what if the place doesn't generally dry out their figs? V'hatznan, makom sheyesh kohen. If there's a kohen, it says in the Mishnah, in Truma, if there's a kohen, then toreim in hayafa. Then better, in other words, what did I tell you before? There's fresh figs which are better. On the other hand, dried figs will last longer. So if there's a kohen and you're giving it to him directly, then better to take the nicer item, which seems to imply that it shouldn't matter whether it's a place that dries the figs or it's a place that doesn't dry the figs, because you're giving it straight to the kohen, and the kohen would rather have fresh figs because they're better. Therefore, it must be elapshita, it must be obvious that the bright is talking about a case dileka kohen, when there is no kohen. Okay? And that's why it's only if there's a place that's ragil to do that you can separate the dried one, the fresh ones, because we know that you can get them dried easily. But the problem is ema seifa, the lo grogrot ala teinim. But you can't, the seifa says you can't take dried ones on the fresh ones. Va'afilu b'makom sheragil aso teinim grogrot. Right? Even if it's a place that's ragil. V'i deleka kohen amai lo. And if there's no kohen, why can't you take the dried ones on the fresh ones? Right? By the way, this is all, I forgot to mention, Rashi says this is all b'minyan. In other words, what we mean is you're taking X amount, right? You're taking 10 on 90 in either direction, right? Then we're going by the number. Because we're basically saying they're worth the same, right? If you can turn one into the other, then they're basically worth the same. So now they say, if there's no kohen, why can't you take the dried ones? V'hatznan, doesn't it say in the Mishnah, makom she'ein kohen, toreim min ha-mitkayem. If there's no kohen available, then better to take your truma from something that will last longer. So why, if we already said the Reisha is talking about a place where there's no kohen, because otherwise you should be allowed to do it even if they don't dry out the figs, even if it's a place where they don't dry out the figs, then the Seifa, when it says you can't take dried ones on fresh ones, doesn't make any sense. Because if there's no kohen, then obviously you're better off taking the mitkayem. And again, this is all based on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, right, if there is a kohen, better to give him the fresh. If there's no kohen, better to take, set aside the dried ones because they'll last. And then it doesn't make any sense why they're not letting you do this. Ela pshita de'ika kohen. So therefore, the seifa sounds like there is a kohen. And that's why you can't give the dried ones, you have to give the fresh ones. So they question and they say, Reisha de'leika kohen, seifa de'ika kohen. So you're going to say, the first case when it says you can take the fresh ones is because there's a kohen. And the seifa, when it says you can't take the dried ones, is when there's no kohen. That doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says, no, in fact, that's the only way to explain this braita. And therefore, we're going to say, in reisha deleika kohen, seifa deika kohen. Okay, so they basically say, when it says you can take fresh figs on the dried figs, that's in a case where there is a kohen. And that's because we go by the mitkayen. Right? The yafeh. We'd rather give him what's yafeh. And the dried ones, you can't give him for the fresh ones because it's a case where there is a kohen, and therefore we'd rather give him the fresh ones and not the dried. Wait, did I say that right? The Reisha is saying you can only give him the fresh ones on the dried ones in a place where people generally dry them, because there we're assuming there is no kohen. But in the Seifa, when it says you can't give him the dried ones, that's because there's a kohen, and therefore you have to give them the fresh ones. So Rav Papa says something interesting. Now I said there's no other resolution, but now we're going to see that there was another possible resolution, and they didn't suggest that. And based on that, Rav Papa says the following statement: Shmami, now we can infer from here something methodological. It's always interesting when we learn methodological, right? Because it's more interesting to see the global picture. Dachkinan umukmina matnitin betray tame, below mukmina betray tenai. It almost sounds like a play on words, right? Better to kind of dachkina, right? To push ourselves into a corner and explain a Mishnah that it's talking about two different situations. Right, in this case, the Braita, right? Matnitin. In this case, we're talking about a Braita, which means a Tanaitic source. When we have a Tanaitic source, it doesn't make sense, right? Better to say, this is one situation and this is another situation, which was Ika Kohen and Leika Kohen, rather than say it's based on two Tanaitic opinions. Okay, what are the two Tanaitic opinions? So, interestingly enough, when the Gemara quoted us this Torah min ha-mitkayem, when there's no Kohen, it said better to be Torah from something that can last longer, there's a machloket tana'im about it. So, since that was what put us in a corner and made us say, oh, it must be, this is when there is Kohen, that's when there isn't a Kohen, the Gemara could have said, oh, but we could say that the Reisha holds by one opinion and the Seifa holds by another opinion. And therefore, the fact that they didn't say, and as when you have a choice, we've seen many times where we've had a case and we say, oh, the Reisha is this opinion and the Seifa is that opinion. So now they're going to say, well, that's always a second resort, okay, or the last resort. If you can come up with a better answer, which is two different situations, obviously neither of these are ideal. Right? You'd rather say the Braita or Mishnah or whatever kind of Tanaitic source is all according to one opinion, according to one situation. Usually we try to have it all line up. But when we're stuck, number one option is to try to say there are two different situations. Number two option, at least according to Rav Papa, what Rav Papa is inferring from here, the number two option would be to say it's two Tanaitic opinions. Okay? So, new Mishnah, new topic. We're still on the issue of making sure the mincha doesn't become chametz. Mishnah. Kol ha-menachot niloshot b'poshrim. Okay, all the menachot, we need them with room temperature water. Okay, now, there's a whole thing here, because if you notice in the Torah we've been talking about, what are the ingredients of a mincha generally? It's the solet. And most of them have shemen, right? Unless they're chareva, they're the dry ones, like the minchat chotim. So most of them have, it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that they need water. So there's this assumption here that the chachamim has realized that you need to have water. Now there's a debate among the Rishonim what the purpose of the water is. Okay? So one answer is that since you need the shemen balul b'mayim, okay? I'm sorry, you need the shemen balu, the mincha, right? Solet mincha balula ba shemen, which means it needs to be mixed well with the shemen. Okay, anyone who makes challah, what do you usually put in it? Water and oil, right? So what they say is in order to mix, what's going to happen? If you put oil directly into the flour, it'll all just be absorbed into the flour. So therefore, what you need to do is first mix it with water and then mix it up with shemen, because the shemen won't mix well if you don't put the water in first. So according to that opinion, the water has to go first. When we talk about mayim niloshot b'shemen b'poshrim, sorry, kol ha-menachot niloshot b'poshrim, that means first you mix it with water, and then you add the shemen, and it's kedei lekayem the balul b'shemen, because there's no good way to knead it with the shemen unless you already have sort of a dough, and then you add the shemen. Now it's interesting, because when we make challah, generally, the recipe doesn't say add the water first and then the oil. We kind of add it all at the same time. But it could be that, you know, with the need for balul b'shemen is a little different than just when we would make a challah dough, right? In other words, it's the special deen of having been mixed properly with the shemen. And the idea is if you put the shemen in right away, it'll just absorb and you won't be able to mix it properly with the shemen. That's one opinion. It's not so convincing, and that's why there's going to be another opinion. The other opinion says that the reason, that the reason why you do it is, let me just get it straight. Right, the Rambam, okay, that's based on Rashi, the first one, and the Rambam says it's not for the purposes of mixing it, it's for the purposes of making a proper dough that's, you know, if you just mix, and this is where I go back to the challah, if you just mixed the solet with shemen, it wouldn't really be able to be baked properly. You need some water in the dough. So therefore, the reason why you do it is to make a proper dough, okay? In other words, it's just logical that you need water in the mixture, right? They realize in order to bake this, you're going to need some water. And therefore, according to him, first you do the balul b'shemen. He doesn't seem to think there's any issue of being bolel with shemen before you add the water. And then after you add the water. It's almost like it's an extra thing. Right. And then there's different kinds of menachot. According to him, there's menachot where you bake it before the kmitza, so then you'd have to add it. There's other menachot that you bake after the kmitza, right? You take the kmitza and only then you bake it. So according to the ones where you don't bake it, since it's only for the purposes of baking, according to the Rambam, you wouldn't even add the water till after the kmitza. Okay, so there's a whole different, based on how you understand this, there's a whole different way the procedure works, right? Do you add the water at the very beginning? Do you add the water in the middle? Right? In other words, after you've added the shemen, before you do the baking, that's the Rambam. Or in a case where there's no baking until after the kmitzah, you would only add it after the kmitzah.
Isn't it a little strange that the Torah is so careful to tell us every single thing, and then there's a big thing they just leave out? But maybe it's how they interpret the status of water, that it's different than anything else. Mm-hmm. You can't have wine, you can't have apples, you can't have anything. Maybe
right.
Water is
it
like
could be. Silly. I think it's actually interesting if you look from a different perspective. I like to look from the perspective of how rabbinic law develops. Like, it's hard to know why the Torah wrote something, didn't write something, right? We see already from the Korbanot. Sometimes they wrote the details, sometimes they wrote two. Sometimes they repeated the details. We're going to see today a case where they repeated it a number of times. Sometimes they don't say the details at all. It's tough to really know. But what's interesting here is that the rabbis come, and each from a different perspective here, or the Rambam and Rashi at least are trying to understand why the earlier rabbis, it was so obvious to them there's water. And then I like to see the process. So what happened? They realized there's no way, it makes no sense to have a mincha without water. So even though the Torah doesn't say it, they take the liberty to say it's obvious that this was meant to be part of it. It just, because water isn't really considered anything, right? It's just not so significant an item, so it just didn't bother to mention it, or it was so obvious that it didn't mention it. But then they assume, but it's obvious there's water. And then, once they do that, come later people, like Rashi and the Rambam, and try to figure out what was their motivation, what they need the water for. Did they need it? Right? And there's another opinion, by the way. This is another interesting one. What did we say? That there's a mitzvah to watch it, that it doesn't become chametz. Now, what did we say? Mei tapuchim, right, is not machmitz, according to one of the opinions. Which means oil is not machmitz either. Now, if oil is not machmitz, and there's a special mitzvah to make sure it doesn't become chametz, then it must be that you have to have water, because if there's a mitzvah to make sure it's not machmitz, there has to be ingredients that make it leaven. So therefore, there must be water, like by default, right? Because if there's a mitzvah to watch it from being leavening, and the shemen won't leaven the dough, then it must be it needs water. So there's three different approaches as to understanding why it was so obvious to the rabbis, which makes it clear that it's not so obvious why the rabbis assumed there was water when it doesn't say so in the Torah. And here everyone's trying to come up with their reason as to why that is. Okay, so now, so kol ha-minachot niloshot b'poshrin u'mishamran shelo yachmitzu, and then you have to watch it to make sure, right, and this is because you added the water, you now have to watch it to make sure it doesn't let. V'im yachmitzu shiareha over b'lo ta'aseh. Now, what are we up to? So there's the part of the mincha that gets burned on the mizbeach, which in some menachot it's everything. In the komincha kohen kalil tiyeh, right? It goes entirely. Some, you burn the kmitza, and the shirayim go to the kohen. Now you might think, well, maybe it's okay if the shirayim leaven, because they're not getting burned on the mizbeach. It's only things that go on the mizbeach that can't leaven. So according to this, even if yichmitzu shiareha, even if it's only the shirayim that leaven, over below tase. And obviously, if the other part, the part that's going to be burned, is machmitzu, you're going to be over below tase. What's the lo tase? Shenehemar, kol hamincha asher takrivu l'Hashem lo tase chametz. Okay, here you have it, right? It can't become chametz. Any mincha, lo tase chametz. The continuation of that pasuk is in Vayikra Perek Bet. If you remember, the mincha comes up in bet and in vav. We're going to go back to those two places in a minute, or in a few minutes. So kol mincha shetakrivu l'Hashem lo taaseh chametz, perek bet, pasuk yud aleph, ki kol seor v'chol dvash lo taktiru mimenu yishel l'Hashem. Can't be burned, right? But they learn from here, it's even the shirayim, even the part that doesn't get burned. V'chayav, now we're going to learn that if it leavens, what acts did you do? No. The leavening process happens on its own. So what are you obligated for? You have to be obligated for an act. So now we're going to learn that you're obligated for all acts that brought the leavening process. You're chayav a separate lo taseh. V'chayav al lishata, on kneading it, because the kneading caused it to leaven. Arichata, the setting it up as a loaf. Shaping it. Ve'alafiata, and on baking it. Okay, so you're chayav. We're going to see there's even a fourth thing you're chayav on. But if you did all those three acts and leavened, you're basically chayav on all, you get malkot, a set of malkot for each one. So now we're going to ask about imechmitzu shiareha. How do we know about the shiraim that you're going to be over on a lo tase? Amar Rish Lakish to Amar Kra. The pasuk says lo teafech chametz chelkam. Okay, this is a strange pasuk. It says like this. It's not really. It's strange rasha because although they do this all the time, they're taking the words a little bit like ignoring tamei amikra. Okay, where you would put a comma in that sentence. The pasuk reads, now we're jumping to Vayikra Perek Vav. Okay, remember this. Vayikra Perek Bet has the pasuk, lo te'aseh chametz. Okay, any mincha, don't make it chametz. Okay, that's our lo te'aseh. And then in Perek Vav, okay, this is Perek Bet, in Perek Vav, it says, lo te'afeh chametz. Okay, and then it says, Chelkam natati ota meishe kodesh kodeshimi kachatat kasham. Okay, this means their part I gave to them. Okay, I gave to the Kohanim. Meishe, okay, it's talking about the Shiraim. But because they read it like this, lo tafeh chametz chelkam, we learn that the chametz and the lo taseh is connected to the chelkam, the part that the Kohanim get, which is the Shiraim. So Rish Lakish says, it says, lo te'afeh chametz chalkam, afilu chalkam, even the chalik of the Kohanim, lo te'afeh chametz. Okay? So that's their drasha. Rish Lakish learns from here. Okay, I want to get this all organized before we move on. Rish Lakish learns from lo te'afeh chametz chalkam, that even the shiraim, right, can't be leavened. Okay? And if they are, you're chayav, you get malkot for it. So now the Gemara asks, "V'hai lahachi huda'ata?" It really comes for this purpose. Hai mebaile, that pasuk we need lechiditanya for a different braita. Lo te'afeh chametz. Now this braita is going to question why it says in Perek Bet lo te'afeh chametz, and it says in Perek Bet lo te'afeh. Why do you need lo te'afeh if you already had lo te'afeh chametz? So lo te'afeh chametz matamud lamar. Why is it here? V'halo kvar ne'amar lo te'afeh chametz. Right, I already said it can't become chametz. So why'd you repeat it here? Lefishin emar lo te'aseh chametz yachol lo yehe chayav el achat al kulam. If it just said lo te'aseh chametz, you would have thought that if it leavens, then you're chayav on one lo te'aseh. Talmud lamar lo te'afeh. Therefore, it says lo te'afeh. And what do we learn from this? Afiya bichlal haita. Now we go back to our yugim umido, right? All these klalim of how we darshan. Afiyah was part of the klal, meaning afiyah was part of the process of making of the asiyah, lo taseh. Lama yatzat, so why did it come out of the klal? Why was it specified after it already said lo taseh, which would have included the baking? Lahakish eleha, to make a hekesh. Ma afiyah miyuchedet, shehi ma'aseh yechidi. What makes afiyah special? Well, it's one part of a number of steps of a process. And because it says lo te'afeh, it means you're chayav an afiyah specifically. So what do we learn? Af ani avi lishata v'arichata v'chol ma'aseh yichidi sheba. From there I can learn that you're also chayav an alisha, and you're also chayav an the aricha, on making the loaves, v'chol ma'aseh yichidi, and any other individual act. So pause for a minute in the braita. We're going to zoom out for a minute. La tuye, what's this kol ma'aseh yechidi sheba? What else is that including? And as it should have just listed, lishata v'arichata, and maybe something else. Why does it say, what are other ma'aseh yechidi? La tuye kituf, shehu ma'aseh yechidi, v'chayavin alea b'fnei atzma. So now they're going to say that that's to include kituf, which is they would put a layer of water on top of the, they would kind of shine it with water, like put it on top of the dough. That is another act that you'd be chayav on if that helped cause the chimutz. Okay? So now the bright is basically saying, what did we say? That Rish Lakish wanted to learn that the shiraim, right? You're chayav alo tasa and the shiraim. But we already learned from that pasuk a different halacha that you're chayav, the other halacha in the Mishnah, which is you're chayav on each individual act. Afiyah, Lisha, right? Since Afiyah was part of the klal, and it specified it to teach you, just Afiyah kind of sets the tone. Afiyah you're going to be chayav on, and therefore you're also going to be chayav on any other act that's like afiyah. Lisha, aricha, kituf. Okay.
Sorry, it doesn't make sense, because if you just do the shaping and the kneading, it doesn't make, like, you have to bake it for it to become chametz. You're not going to eat raw dough.
So, first of all, that's not true. In other words, you're right that it has to be baked, But what caused it to leaven? When you're kneading it, that causes the dough to rise.
Yes.
And if you leave it for too long and it leavens, then that causes it to rise. So it's true, without the afiyah, it's not actually bread. But since that act helped the leavening process...
So if you just left the dough and not, it still would have eventually... I mean, it's a little strange because without... They could have just said baking.
Right. Right, they could have. And we're gonna ask that question, okay? So now, the answer... So before we get back to that, we're now going to answer our question. So how did Rish Lakish learn from that pasuk if we already learned something else from that pasuk? So very simply, Anan Michel Kam Ka'amrinan. Right? We learn it out. It's Darshan Dafka from Chelkam. In other words, Lo Tefech Chametz is coming to teach you what the Braita said about that you're Chayav and Afiyah and Lishan and all those. But the word Chelkam is coming to teach you that you're also Chayav and the Shiraim. So now they say, well, if the word Chelkam comes to teach you that you're Chayav and the Shiraim, why don't we say Ema Kulei Lahachi Yudata? Why don't you say the whole pasuk is coming to teach you about the Shiraim? Lo Tefech Chametz Chelkam is coming to teach you you're Chayav and Lo Taseh on the Shiraim. And has nothing to do with the mincha itself, leavening and all that. It's really just come and teach you the din that it also applies to the shiraim. So now the answer in Cain, lichtov chelkam lo tefech chametz. If you wanted it to, if you want to say the subject of this whole pasuk in Perek Vav is all about the chelak of the kohanim, the shiraim. That's all it's talking about. Then it would have started out chelkam lo tefech chametz. It would have been very specific. From their part, you can't make a chametz, meaning the shiraim. My lo tefech chametz chelkam, the fact that it's ordered lo tefech chametz, and then only after that comes the word chelkam, from there we can learn shma mina atarte. You can learn both things. Okay. Now we're going to go back to what Shari was suggesting. Ve'ema afiyah de peret barachmana lichayev chada. Why don't we say that since the Torah specified afiyah, that means you're chayav only once on the afiyah itself, like Shari's suggesting, and not, right? And inach, sorry, lechayav chada, chayav rachmana lechayav, prayer rachmana lechayav chada, inach lechayav chada akulu. Ah, right, they're suggesting a little different. They're saying, why don't you say that on afiyah you're chayav one, and all the others, you be chayav chada akulu. If you did lisha, aricha, kituf, you don't get, because it didn't say lisha, aricha, or kituf in the pasuk. Therefore, you'll just get one lo taseh for all of them. Okay, so they're not suggesting that you would get only for afiyah, like Shari said. But what they're suggesting is maybe you get one for afiyah. That's unique because it's specified. And all the others you get one for. Mishum, why would you think this? Mishum dehavar, so now they're going to say, no, why is it not the case? Mishum dehava davar shaya bichlal v'yatzamen haklal lelamed. Right? Here's our klal. Something that was bichlal. It was a part of the klal of lo taseh. And then it's yatzamen haklal lelamed. And then it comes out of the klal to teach something. Lo lelamed al atzmo yatza ela lelamed al haklal kulo yatza. Okay, therefore, the way we learn, that's the principle is, when something comes out of the klal, it's not only to teach about itself, it's to teach about everything else also. So now they're going to suggest like this. Maybe it's not a davar shaya bichlal, yatzamen haklal. Maybe it falls into a different category of drashot, okay, of midot. What would it be? Ema lo teaseh is a klal, and lo teafeh is a prat. Klal uprat, ein biklal, ela masha biprat. Okay, so now they're going to say, right, why don't you say it's a klal uprat? And if it's a klal uprat, what do you say? Klal uprat, ein biklal, ela masha biprat. When you have a klal, and then you have a prat, you have a general statement, and then you have a specific statement. So the specific statement, right, what do we learn? It only applies to what's biprat, which would teach us what? That would teach us then what Sherry is saying, which is afiyah in, you only get a lo taseh an afiyah, and midi achrini lo. So why don't we say this is a klal, this is a prat, right? What's the problem with this klal uprat? Generally, a klal uprat is in the same section in the Torah. This is a klal is in Perek Bet and the prat is in Perek Vav. Okay? So, Amar Rabbi Yaptoriki, Mishum dahave klal uprat hameruchakin zemize, Bechol klal uprat hameruchakin zemize, Ein danim oto b'klal uprat. You can't use the principle of klal uprat here because there are four prakim apart from each other. We don't make a klal uprat when they're so far apart. Generally, klal uprat is within one section. So now they're going to question this assumption of Rav Avturiki. Is that really true that we never do a klal uprat? If they're beruchakim, mativ Rav Adbarava va'amrei lachti. Okay, either Rav Adbarava said it or we're not sure who said it. Uklal uprat hamiruchakim zemizeh. Ain danim oto beklal uprat. Okay, he came in question and said, is it really true? Bahatanya, now we're going to bring a braita. The way it's going to work is like this. Here's the structure. We're going to bring a braita. We're going to explain the braita. And then we're going to assume that what was underlying this concept was the klal uprat. And the klal uprat is going to be a klal uprat hamiruchakim zemizeh. Okay, but it doesn't actually say in the braita that it's a klal uprat. Then we're going to say, oh, this isn't really a klal uprat. Okay, so that's the way it's going to work. V'hatanya, this should sound familiar because we learned it in Zvachim. V'shachat oto b'makom asher yishchat et ha'olah. Okay? What's this talking about? This is about the nasi. You remember there were all these korbanot, right? There was the korbanot that you bring if you're the parlin of a shel tzibur, and right? This is asher nasi echeta. If the nasi does a sin, he brings a seir, and he shechs it. Okay, it's a seir l'chatat, and he shechs it in the place where they shech the olah. What does that mean? In the tzafon, remember? Lifnei Hashem. Okay, there it says Lifnei Hashem in the pasuk. Chatati. Okay, this chatatu. That's the rest of the pasuk. Hechan olah nishchetet, b'tzafon, avze b'tzafon. Okay, so what do we learn? The nasi, asher nasi achata, where does he bring his korban? In the tzafon. That's what we learn from that pasuk. V'chi anu mikan lemedim, but how can we learn it from there? Halo kvar ne'emar b'makom asher tishachet ha'olah tishachet ha'chatat lefnei Hashem. Okay, what's this pasuk? This is in, okay, let me just also, you have to get the order straight here. Okay, in Vayikra Dalid is the nasi. Okay? The nasi appears there. That's our pasuk where it says you have to shecht it in the tzafon. But in Vayikra Vav, okay, which comes after it, keep that in mind, it says Zot Torah Tachatat. These are the laws, right? That's the general pasuk about all chataot. Now, the nasi was a chatat, right? And it already says there all the chatat should be shechted in the place where the olas are shechted, which means tzafon. So it's already said there. So what do we need it for? Ha lama ze yatsa likovo sheim lo shachat oto b'tzafon psalo. Okay, why is it coming to tell you that if you don't do it in the tzafon, remember we learned something's repeated twice, it's lakev. So what does it teach you? That if the nasi brings his korban and he doesn't shecht it in the tzafon, it's disqualified. So now they say, now they're going to raise a question on this. Ata omer lechach yatzat? O eno ella, that's the reason why I came to teach you that it's ma'akev. Maybe eno ella sheze ta'un tzafon ve'ein acher ta'un tzafon. Maybe it's coming to teach you that even though it says zot harat hachatat, b'mkom asher yishchat ha'olah yishchat hachatat, which is general about all chatot, maybe when it specifies it by the nasi, it's coming to tell you only by the nasi do you have to do it in the tzafon, and you really don't need to do it in the tzafon for any other chatat. Now, later we're going to have to figure out why they even came up with this Havamina. Now, it's such a strange Havamina. So hold off. Therefore, Talmud Lomar, therefore there's a third Pasuk. What's the third Pasuk? The third Pasuk is in Bayikra Dalit also, but later when it's talking about the individual who sins, it says, V'samach yado rosh ha-chatat, v'shachat et ha-chatat bimkom ha-ola. So since there's a third verse, so Talmud Lomar b'shachat et ha-chatat b'mkom ha'olah. By the way, you see here all the parentheses. All these psukim are very similar, and because of that, when they were putting together the printed edition, people got confused with which pasuk was which, and they wrote all the wrong words because they kind of remembered vaguely. There's all these psukim about it, and they did it by memory and not by actually looking in a Tanakh. That's just the people who prepared it for the printing. This isn't obviously the people who wrote it originally. So because there's a third pasuk, that decides it. That shows you it's clear, it applies to all chataot. So now, Tama dekata rachmana v'shachata tachatat. So it's only because of that third pasuk. But halav hachi, without that third pasuk, havamina, what would we have thought? What was that original havamina we had? Sheze ta'un safon, that only the nasi needs safon, ve'ein acher ta'un safon. So now why, where would you get this havamina? Right? It says zotarat tachatat, that's a generalization. And then it says nasi acheta. So therefore, what are they saying? My taima, lav mishum dehave klalu prat. Right? It sounds like a classic klalu prat. Klalu prat, what do we say? Ein lecha beklal ela masha beprat. Meaning, we have a klal zotarat achatat, but then it specifies. So therefore, we're going to say, it only applies to the specification, to nothing else. That must be why. Ve'af agav demeruchakin ze mizeh danim oto beklalu prat. And here's your proof, that even though these two appear, one in dalet, one in vav, even though they're distanced from each other, it's still a klal uprat. So how can you say, in the previous, right, the answer he gave was, oh, we don't have klal uprat because they're different, they're distanced from each other. So now they're going to knock out Matzki flower of Ashi. Rash says, what are you talking about? Hi, klal uprat. This isn't a klal uprat. It's a prat of klalu. You messed up the order. A klal uprat means first you have the generalization, then you have the specific case. In this case, Vayikra Dalit is the Nasi, which is the specific. Vayikra Vav is the generalization. That's called a Pratu Klal. That's not a Klalu Prat. So even, you know, forget the Maruch Hakim, this isn't even a Klalu Prat. And therefore, you can't disprove what he was trying to say because this isn't a Klalu Prat. It's a Pratu Klalu. And how does a Pratu Klal work? Nase Klal Mosif Ala Prat Vidrabilihu Kol Mile. So now, you don't even need the third pasuk according to him. What does he say? If you have a prat and then you have a klal, what does the klal come to teach you? That we're adding to the prat. And that's how we get to that it applies to all chataot. Okay? But now, what we're still stuck with, according to this interpretation, why did they think in the first place that it would only apply to the nasi? So, tana oto kakashile, b'hachi kamar. In other words, what was the issue? In that pasuk by the Nasi, it says, v'samach yado al rosh asir, v'shachat oto b'makom sh'shachat ha'ta'ola. Okay, so therefore they say, the oto is what was disturbing that Tana. When the Tana thought that maybe it only applies to that one, it's because it said the word should have just said, v'shachato b'makom sh'shachat, right? And he slaughters it. But it, because it says shachat oto, and it added that whole extra word, that must be what made him think. V'hachi kamar, and this is what he was saying. O'eno ela shezet ta'un safon, ve'en acher ta'un safon, dekata brachmana oto. Okay? But since the pasuk said oto, maybe it's coming to tell us that just that one, only that one. V'hashta denavka mi v'shachat et hachatat. So now, in the end, since according to Rav Ashi, What did we say? It's a klal mosif ala prat. So therefore, it's obvious it applies across the board. So why did you need that third pasuk, b'shachata tachatat? Now that they have the word, b'shachata tachatat, otolami ute mai. Now that they say b'shachata tachatat comes to include and say, we had the oto, which made us think it was only that. Then we end up with saying, well, because it says b'shachata tachatat in the other pasuk, it teaches us that actually everything, and not just that. So what's the oto lemiute mai? What's it coming to do? Oto b'tzafon ve'ein si'ir nachshon b'tzafon. It's to teach you that while it's true that all chataot are b'tzafon, there's one exception. And what's the exception? The si'ir nachshon. If you remember, what's si'ir nachshon? All the nisi'im brought korbanot chatat, even though they didn't sin. Since they're not sin offerings, we're going to treat them a little differently. And they don't have to be done b'tzafon. Salkadat achamina, you might have thought what? Now, why would you have thought Seir Nachshon, since it's not coming for Kapara al Chet, why would you have thought it was done b'tzafon? You might have thought, Ho'il v'idrabi linyan smicha, idrabi nami linyan tzafon, ka mashmalan. You would have thought that since we learn, when normally when you bring Korban Chatat, you have to do smicha, because what's smicha, the way the Ramban describes it anyway, is that you're kind of passing on your sins to the animal. So you do it on a Chatat. And Nachshon did smicha on his korban, which is going to be tomorrow. We're going to start with how do we know that in Zir Nachshon you do smicha? We'll get to that. There's actually a machloket about it. So since Zir Nachshon you have to do smicha, you might have thought you also have to do it in the tzafon. Comes the word oto in the nasi pasuk about the nasi achta to teach you only this, meaning Well, not only this, because we have the Zotarat HaChatat, and then we have the Shachatat HaChatat in the third place. So it obviously applies to all Chataot, except for one. Oto comes to limit from the Siyur Nachshon, that when the Nisi'im brought their Korbanot, they didn't do it in the Tzafon. Okay, tomorrow we're going to see, how do we know that Smicha was there, and that was why we had the Havamina, that maybe, we needed the Oto to teach you, it doesn't need Tzafon.